This is the first segment in a new series intended to explore the ways in which scientific skepticism and the skeptical outlook can help us to understand moral issues in addition to empirical or scientific ones. In Skeptical Ethics, we'll first try to understand the function of skeptical analysis and reasoning in general and as it applies to moral issues. Then we'll begin relying on that understanding to examine various ethical, social, and cultural controversies. In this first segment, we'll examine the question, does skepticism lead to agreement? Exploring how skeptical reasoning works to clarify issues and build understanding. In the second Skeptical Ethics segment, we'll consider the ways the skeptical toolkit can be applied to moral issues specifically. After that, we'll begin our weekly analyses of particular moral issues, digging into value-laden controversies and trying to make rational headway. I hope you'll join me on this journey in the coming weeks. First, some clarification. As you may know, the word skepticism gets used in different ways. Among scientific skeptics, it refers to the application of rationality and confirmable evidence to answer questions of empirical fact, using the scientific method or something like it. But among philosophers, skepticism means the refusal to believe that a certain thing is possible or that it exists at all. Moral skeptics believe there are no sure moral rules or judgments, that morality is subjective or arbitrary. In skeptical ethics, though we're discussing morality from a scientific skeptical perspective, we are not adopting moral skepticism in the philosophical sense. In fact, just the opposite. The belief that there is such a thing as moral truth and moral knowledge is the motivation for seeking that knowledge as effectively as we can, and the tools of scientific skepticism will turn out to be helpful in that search. So how does empirically grounded scientific skepticism relate to the search for knowledge incorporating beliefs about intangible values arising from culture, not nature? The answer lies in the role and function of scientific skepticism, which I'll just refer to as skepticism from now on, in the search for knowledge in general. Here's a question. Do all skeptics agree on all issues? In fact, there is good agreement among almost all skeptics in many cases. Skeptics almost uniformly reject obvious frauds like faith healing or dowsing. But skeptics are more divided on quasi-scientific things like acupuncture, where the data may be fuzzier. In cases where outcomes are difficult to quantify or where data are near the limits of statistical significance, there may be disagreements over how to analyze the data. So, while skeptics and scientists do agree on the need for rational and empirical analysis of factual claims about the world, and on many of the methods used in such analysis, they may not always reach the same conclusions in cases where there is disagreement on the treatment of basic data beyond the limits of skeptical methodology. But if there is sometimes disagreement between skeptics, even on basic factual questions, how do we apply skeptical methods to questions of personal values or public policy, and especially to the moral dimensions of such issues? Aren't those things that are even further outside the boundaries of traditional skepticism, on which we shouldn't expect skeptics to come to agreement? Consider how a skeptical analysis proceeds for a typical issue that skeptics encounter, one that has both a factual and a public policy dimension. Let's take as an example homeopathy. The factual issue with homeopathy is simple. The process by which homeopathic treatments are said to work makes no sense on its face. There is no active material in many homeopathic preparations. Also, its supposed mechanism of action, chemical memory imparted into water during the dilution process, flatly contradicts the most basic foundations of well-tested science. Finally, the limited research which it is claimed has been done on the subject is dubious or incompetent. Given this complete lack of empirical evidentiary support and its conflict with scientific principles overwhelmingly demonstrated to be reliable, the claim that homeopathy produces effective medicines is entirely unsupportable and therefore should be rejected. And this conclusion is reached entirely on empirical grounds. But what about the public policy issues associated with homeopathy? Whether the preparations have any chemical or physiological function is a question of scientific fact, but there are practical questions that also have to be answered, such as, should homeopathic preparations be classified and regulated as medicines? Should there be any kind of barriers to the use of these preparations, such as warning labels or limitations on prescribing them? Should they be completely banned in some or all cases, such as for particular diseases or for children? It's important to recognize two things here. First, these practical questions are not identical with the scientific question that was already addressed. Obviously, whether homeopathic preparations actually work is central to deciding how such preparations should be regulated and used, but as important as that scientific issue is, and as much as many scientific skeptics may be tempted to think that that is the only issue, there is more to be considered. The practical or policy questions I mentioned, how to regulate homeopathy, whether it should be treated as medicine, and so forth, are all questions that incorporate issues of personal and public interest, as well as of scientific fact. Many people believe homeopathy is effective despite all evidence to the contrary. They feel it is an imposition not to be allowed to have the treatments they prefer. Many feel it's an important political principle that people should be allowed to make such decisions for themselves. Others have personal or religious concerns about how much authority they have to make decisions for their own children. In short, these questions of law, rights, and practical policy are all questions that incorporate human values, personal values, political values, religious values. Simply declaring the facts, no matter how sure we may be of them, does not by itself answer the question of what values we should promote in our policy. Different answers to that policy question can be given even by people who agree on the scientific facts, but who have different values. This brings up a well-known concept that underlies the distinction I've made here, and that we will have to return to often in our analyses of moral and practical issues. It is the fact-value distinction. Facts and values are not only not the same thing, they are not the same types of things. Facts are actual states of reality, or true propositions expressing some statement about the nature of reality. Because they represent the nature of reality, and the nature of reality is independent of observation or opinion, facts are independent of the observer. A given fact is true for everyone, whether or not they know it or believe it. In any disagreement over facts, at least one party must be wrong. Values, on the other hand, are personal priorities, desires, or emotional commitments. Values are particular to the individuals holding them. Everyone has their own values, and there is no contradiction in the fact that different people have different values. Values also do not have a truth status. They are not the types of things that can be true or false. We should acknowledge that some values can be good or bad in a moral sense, but that is not the same as truth or falsity. Thus, there is a fundamental distinction between facts and values, but both facts and values are relevant in analyzing situations for purposes of decision-making or policy setting. This brings us to the second issue of importance, however, which is the role of skeptical analysis in practical or policy-related issues. Because of the fact-value distinction, it may seem that skeptical or scientific input must be limited to simply resolving questions of fact and then turning policymaking over to those authorized to make value decisions. But there is still a role for skeptical analysis to play in such decision-making. Skepticism emphasizes logic and argument analysis, and it can use its tools of analysis to examine issues in which the arguments, rather than the data, are the main source of contention in reaching agreement on a conclusion. Skeptics can bring this ability to issues of public policymaking, even on value-driven questions. Skeptical analysis cannot tell people what values to have, but it can question whether their value preferences are mutually consistent, and whether they contradict other important socially held values or general moral principles. It can also help determine whether value-based premises are being used correctly in argumentation over policy issues. Such arguments are open to rational analysis just as much as fact-based arguments. In this way, skeptical analysis is relevant to both the factual grounding and the rational assessment of policy proposals, even when those proposals incorporate elements of personal or social values. What we've seen, then, is that issues regarding practical human action, reflecting personal or social values, often have both a factual and a logical component, just as many scientific debates do. The fact-value distinction limits what skepticism can say as to the truth of the value-based premises of such debates, but their logical and rational structure is also open to analysis. This makes skepticism relevant, at least in some ways, to many debates and controversies that are not entirely empirical or scientific. It opens up many contentious and important public issues to analysis using the tools of skepticism. In the next episode of Skeptical Ethics, we'll consider how those tools can be applied not just to practical policy issues, but to the even more contentious subject of moral issues. After that, we'll tackle issues of that kind week after week. I hope you'll find it as fascinating as I do.